Welcome to the Herpetile Podcast. My name is Nash and I love herpetology. This podcast explores all things to do with reptiles and amphibians. I hope you like it. Welcome to the show. My name is Nash and I'm the host of the Herpetile Podcast. My guest today is Josh Cox. Josh is the director of Reptile Encounters, which is a mobile zoo based in Melbourne, Australia. Reptile Encounters delivers experiences with Australian native animals and is home to 465 birds, mammals, amphibians and reptiles, plus a bunch of creepy crawlies and marine creatures. The goal of Reptile Encounters is to create a generation of better humans. And Josh and the rest of his team are passionate wildlife ambassadors and aim to be a voice for those who don't have one. Today, I'm at the Reptile Encounters warehouse with Josh and I'm going to have a tour to see all the incredible animals here. Josh, I'm so happy to have you on the show today. Hi.
Thanks for inviting me, Nash. It's a pleasure to be on the Herpetile Podcast. It's a bit of a tongue twister, that one.
So my first question is, how and when did you first become interested in working with animals?
Oh, good question, Nash. I've loved animals for as long as I can remember. I was always that kid out in the garden, looking under logs, looking under rocks, looking for skinks, and just fascinated by, everything animal-wise. So, from a very young age, I think I got my first pet when I was about five, and that was a bunny rabbit. And then ever since then, just been, mad on keeping all sorts of animals, and obviously more lately native animals and native Australian animals. So it's been a lifelong passion.
So then why did you start Reptile Encounters?
Oh, very good question. So I started Reptile Encounters because I had this burning passion for wildlife and nature, and I wanted to be able to share that with other people. Unfortunately, now people are a little bit disconnected from nature. Not everybody lives out in the bush like you do out in Kyneton. So I wanted to be able to bring nature to people and reconnect them, because there's a lot of benefits to being connected to nature. It obviously makes us feel good. Even being in green spaces makes people feel good. So, I wanted to bring that to people. And also, if we're not passionate about animals, we're not going to want to protect them. So by making people interested and passionate and engaged with our native wildlife, hopefully they'll want to protect these species into the future.
So just because we're in the middle of sort of nearing the end of COVID-19, how has it affected Reptile Encounters?
Very good question. It's been a tricky time, like it has been for a lot of people. So obviously a big part of our business is going to schools and educating school students. So obviously that hasn't been able to happen for the last few months. So we've been busy doing other things. So we've been doing a lot of videos. We've been doing a lot of live streaming. And we're also planning on doing some podcasts as well. So there's lots of things we can do. It's just meant we've had to change our tact, change our tune, and continue to get the message out there, because obviously, it wasn't that long ago that we had half the east coast of Australia in fire, burning up. So I think it's important that people don't forget that. Climate change is a massive issue facing humanity, and we need to keep working towards a more sustainable future.
So then what is, like, Reptile Encounters? Like, what would they do if they went to a school?
What do we do? Okay, so very good question. When we go into a classroom, we take a number of different animals, and those animals, it depends on the topic and the subject. We educate people about those animals, and it might be about their habitat, it might be about the body features, the adaptations, how animals are suited to particular ecosystems, what their roles are, maybe what their threats are, what are the challenges facing those species. And also we look at what ways that we can help that species to survive as well. So it depends on the year level, it depends on the subject. We make those incursions as interactive as we can. So If the animal's okay to be touched, we let people have a touch of the animal. And occasionally we get a couple of students to also have a hold of those animals as well.
So then what would be the differences between those year levels? So if you were teaching like primary school and then a high school, what would be the difference?
Okay, so our programs are connected to the curriculum. So, for example, for early foundation year level, it's living and non-living things is a curriculum topic. So that's something that we could discuss in the classroom, whereas once you get up to year seven, classification is something that they discuss in the classroom. So we just tailor our program so that we're making sure that we're covering curriculum content, but we're still bringing in the animals and engaging people with our wildlife.
So then how did you get all the animals for Reptile Encounters? Because
yeah. we do have a lot of animals. So I had probably a collection of maybe 30 animals when I started Reptile Encounters 30 years ago, and that was a range of lizards, snakes. I think I had a sugar glider. I had some stick insects. I had frogs. So I had a range of animals to start with. And then over the years, we've just acquired more animals from zoos, from private keepers. Occasionally we breed animals here, so we swap our animals for other people's. So we've just acquired a collection over many years.
Do you keep the animals here, or do you have somewhere to keep them?
Like, so this is where we keep them, Reptile Encounters HQ.
Mm-hmm. So then I read on your website that you encourage kids to keep native animals. Can you talk a bit about that?
Well, in Australia, we have a big problem with introduced species. So I'm thinking of foxes and cats primarily, and a lot of people grow up keeping cats and dogs. And obviously these animals aren't native to Australia and can cause problems for our native wildlife. So as opposed to keeping introduced species as pets, I think for young kids to get inspired by and motivated, it's great to keep native animals. Obviously, sometimes they have unique husbandry requirements. They need special enclosures. They need special, whether it's temperature, whether it's UV, whether it's diets, they have special needs. But I believe as long as we cater to those special needs and we provide our animals with enrichment and a good life, I don't have any issue with kids keeping native animals as pets.
So then what do you think about the schools keeping native animals? Because I guess they a lot of animals, like some snakes, would probably wouldn't like kids running past and yelling all the time.
Yeah, so obviously it depends on the animal and it depends on the situation. So in schools, I think you need someone in the school that is going to champion looking after that particular animal. So if you don't have someone who's mad passionate about looking after a snake in the school, well, don't have a snake in the school because it's not going to get taken care of. So usually where it works well is there's someone in the school who, you know, knows what they're doing, knows how to look after the animals, and will make sure that everything's done correctly.
Mm-hmm. So you also talk a bit about technology creating a barrier between us and nature.
Yeah, definitely. Well, you know, young kids these days from, you know, even the age of 3 and 4 are spending over 2 hours a day in front of a screen. And I'm not saying all screen time is bad, but if we're in front of a screen, we're also not out in the garden, we're not out in nature, we're not running around. And I read an interesting article from a study down in Tasmania this week. Kids aged 11 and 12 can't jump as high as they could 35 years ago. And that's because they're not as active. They're not playing as much outside. They're spending more time sitting down in front of a screen. So I think that's, a little bit sad because playing outside is really important for our development. It's really important for our creativity, makes us think. So we need to continue to have that creative play and outside time.
Yeah. So then do you think technology could have a positive impact on nature?
Well, absolutely. So there has been some research coming out that is suggesting that you can still get positive outcomes looking at nature on a screen as well as seeing it in real life. So there is a good thing, and I'm sure we've all enjoyed watching David Attenborough's documentaries on a screen. So there still is a benefit to technology, and hopefully it means also we can get the message out far and wide. So it's not all bad technology.
Like this podcast.
Exactly.
So then some scientists are saying we're in a mass extinction, like, because of technology and things like that. Do you think individuals could play a role in stopping that?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think your generation is the generation that is going to change the world. So you have a very important role to play. And obviously technology is also going to help us get that voice out really, really far. It's obviously a really, really big challenge quite a big burden as well. But I think, it's also exciting at the same time that you could be the generation that changes the planet.
Yeah. What about your book, Better Humans?
Yeah, it's been a work in progress for a couple of years now. So hoping maybe by early next year I should be able to get that published.
Have you finished writing it or?
I've written a first edit. Okay. Yeah, so I've written about 25,000 words so far.
Okay.
And we've had one edit, but we're waiting on a bit more information to go in there. So basically the idea is that we want to empower students to be able to save the planet. So young wildlife champions like yourself have a bit of a roadmap on what they can do to help protect species and protect the environment.
So, who would that book be targeted to?
It's going to be targeted towards your teachers and leaders in the schools.
Yeah. So then I think I heard you had a degree in medical science. Why?
Good question. My other passion growing up was health and fitness. So I was mad about sport growing up. I did athletics. I played a lot of tennis and I played a lot of Australian rules football as well. So 7 days a week I was doing sport. I was running. I was fit, healthy. So I didn't want to go down the animal path because I already had a menagerie of animals at home. I was already cleaning out cages for about 2 hours every day. So I didn't want to do any more of that. So I was trying to pursue a passion in the health and fitness area, and hence I did medical science. And that just steered me in the direction, completely different direction. I actually worked in pharmaceutical sales for a number of years while I started the business, and it was actually a good training ground for running your own business.
So would getting the medical science degree influenced you to start Reptile Encounters then?
Well, absolutely. So working in the pharmaceutical industry, we had to manage our own business or manage our own territory, which was a great way to then start Reptile Encounters, because obviously Reptile Encounters is a business as well. It also, that job, I did a lot of public speaking.
Mm-hmm.
It was mainly in front of doctors, but it was still public speaking, which is very helpful for mm-hmm. what I do now. It was important for my career progression, and I think it's having that science background is also good for credibility as well.
So what type of animals would you bring to a school? Like, would you bring amphibian? Like, are you more likely to bring amphibians or reptiles if you were at like a normal primary school and you didn't have much an idea on what to do? What would you bring?
Well, it's a good question, Ash. We have a number of different shows that we offer. Mm-hmm. So we have 4 shows that are tailored for the preschool market. We have, how many shows is it now? I'm starting to forget. We've got 7 at primary level.
Yeah.
We've got 5 at secondary level and 2 at VCE level. So it depends which show it is as to what animals we bring. So one of our favourite shows is Feathers, Fern, Scales. So we bring out a bird, which might be an owl or a cockatoo.
Yeah.
We bring out a mammal, which could be like a little kangaroo or a possum. Yeah. And then we bring out a range of reptiles as well. So we have lots of animals to choose from. And also some of the presenters here, or wildlife ambassadors we call them, they have favourite animals too. So they like to take their favourites out, obviously, because they love them.
Yeah. So would you do much with adults?
With adults? Yeah, we do a lot with adults, and we work with a few of the TAFEs as well. So we have a TAFE that's close by here called Box Hill Institute. We had a program for them maybe 2 weeks ago, educating their TAFE students. And obviously, there's always adults in the audience wherever we are. Obviously, yeah. In schools, there's the teachers and the principals and the leaders. And then when we're out at, we do corporate events and festivals, there's always a range of people in the audience. So, yeah, I don't think animals discriminate. People love animals, whether they're young or old. So that's a great thing.
So do you keep any personal pets, like, at home?
I have one dog. His name is Jet. He's a Staffy cross. He's about 26 kilos. He's a bit like a wombat.
So then when you started it, would you have moved all your pets from home to the business? Or?
Yeah, so the business was run from home for probably the first 10 or 11 years. And then it's only in the last couple of years that we've got a big commercial space now. And Jet's always come to work with me up until only recently. I've started leaving him at home. He's getting a bit old now. So it was a long time. I had animals in my kitchen, in my lounge room, all over the house. So it's been nice the last couple of years to be able to separate work and home.
Do you answer any snake calls or anything?
No, we don't do snake call outs. We're busy enough as it is, Nash, doing our education side. Haven't sort of.
So you don't really do any, like, field stuff?
Not venom snake relocations. We have a relationship with Wildlife Victoria. So if they have any reptiles that they need assistance with, often we'll go out and do their reptile call outs. Mm-hmm. As far as snake relocations, we leave that to the snake catchers.
So what type of people work at Reptile Encounters?
Good question. We have a large number of people from La Trobe Uni. They have a degree there called Animal Veterinary Bioscience. So a lot of our staff have done that degree out at La Trobe. But we also do have some from Deakin and Monash. Often they're zoology students or environmental science students that want to work in the zoo industry or the animal industry, and they're all mad passionate about wildlife.
So how would you find people for it? Like, would you just watch who's graduating or something?
Good question. They generally find us, Nash, so we're pretty lucky. We have a lot of people trying to get in the door and get into the industry. So we've always got lots of people coming through. Often they might volunteer for a short period of time before they get a job.
So who can volunteer here?
Who can volunteer? Well, generally we look for university students that are studying something that is relevant. So whether it's zoology, we get quite a few vet students as well coming through and doing some volunteer experience. That's generally what we look for. So usually in their early 20s, and they'll come through and we have a volunteer program so they get experience working with certain species of animals that we have here at Reptile Encounters.
So do you encourage everyone to keep native animals? Because you say we shouldn't keep introduced animals.
So, well, introduced animals can pose a threat to our wildlife here. So obviously in Australia we have a big problem with cats. We have 25 million cats in the country and they eat 75 million native animals every single night. So
that's 3 a night. Yeah.
That's a very large number of native animals. So obviously I'm fine if people are responsible pet owners, if people keep their cats contained inside at nighttime. But I think it's great also for young kids like yourself to take an interest in our native wildlife and learn about our native wildlife, because if we understand it, we're more likely to protect it.
So do you do much breeding for reptile encounters?
So it's not our primary focus to breed animals here, but we do have a lot of animals here that do breed. We breed a lot of our marsupials, our sugar gliders and squirrel gliders and bettongs. I think we've got a baby paddy melon in the pouch at the moment. Hoping for some ringtail possums soon. We also breed some of our reptiles, We've got some baby bearded dragons at the moment. We've bred lots of frill neck lizards over the years. We've bred some water monitors in the past. We've bred snakes. So, yeah, we breed quite a few things.
Do they all take up a lot of space? Or, yeah, how do you get all the space to fit them?
Good question. Well, we're about to take you behind the scenes so you can see. Yeah. But, yeah, it's hard to have enough space. And this is one of the considerations when you do breed an animal is you've got to be able to look after it. So, yeah, we have a fair amount of space out the back, and generally we try and have a few spare enclosures so if new arrivals do come, we've got somewhere to house them.
So if you could tell everyone something about reptiles or amphibians, what would it be?
Oh, what would it be? I guess that they're not always the most popular animals. You know, some people think they're icky or they're a little bit gross, but they're all very, very important. They all play a role in the ecosystem. They all need to be respected. And if we can, I guess, help to provide as much habitat for these animals as possible, because unfortunately with growing human population, that population growth has put pressure on lots of species. And here in Victoria, we actually have 120 species on the brink of extinction. So that's a lot of species. So planting native plants in your garden, leaving rocks and logs that animals can hide under is excellent and provides, yeah, habitat for those species. So a lot of them are small. It might be growling grass frogs that you have or marsh frogs. It might be blue-tongued lizards in your garden. Helping to protect those guys because they all play a role in the ecosystem.
So you don't do any conservation work on that though?
Do we do?
Yeah.
Yeah, we do lots of projects. We take students out to plant trees for koalas. We take students out to do plastic surveys on beaches. We do all sorts of things that get people out into the field and doing positive things for the environment.
So my final question for you today is, what is an unusual fact about reptiles or amphibians that people might not know?
Good question. I guess one of my favourite facts is about turtles. You might know what it is, but turtles can breathe through their nostrils, but what else can they do?
Breathe through their butts.
They can breathe through their bottoms, their bottom breathers. Yeah, so we call it cloacal respiration. They have little cells called bursae in the cloaca that absorb oxygen. So yeah, it's a pretty funny fact. And gets a good reaction from the public.
And some of them do the, like, little push-ups under the water
too. Yep.
Yeah. So thank you so much for being on the Herpetile podcast, Josh.
No problem, Nash. It's been a pleasure.
I'll put a link to Josh's website in the description. Bye.
Thank you, guys. Enjoy the podcast.
Thanks for listening to the Herpetile podcast. Please subscribe so you don't miss out on any of the latest episodes. Happy herping!